Welcome to the UCSF Sports Medicine Podcast, 6 to 8 weeks, Perspectives in Medicine. During our program, we continue to cover a variety of hot topics in the sports medicine world and more.
Welcome, everyone, to our UCSF Sports Medicine Podcast, 6 to 8 weeks with myself, Dr. Nira Pandya, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdowne. Today, we'll be covering labral tears. Now, a lot of people have questions about labral tears and what exactly is this injury. People are very familiar with meniscus injuries and ACL tears. When they hear they've injured their labrum, what exactly is going on? What are the treatment options? And what role does it actually play in the shoulder? Now, a lot of NBA fans have heard about labral tears in athletes this past season. We've had Julius Randle, Kevin Huerter, Ja Morant all suffer labral injuries that required surgery. In addition, Stephen Curry out here in the Bay Area had a labral injury when he suffered his shoulder subluxation. What exactly is a labrum? The labrum is a type of cartilage in the shoulder that surrounds the glenoid, which is the socket. It helps provide stability to the shoulder. The labrum can be injured in multiple different ways. In athletes, it can be injured traumatically when the shoulder dislocates or partially dislocates out of the joint. Typically, the shoulder dislocates out the front of the joint, and you can get a tear of the anterior-inferior labrum, which is sometimes called a Bankart injury. In repetitive throwing athletes, such as pitchers, sometimes you can injure the superior part of the labrum that extends from anterior and posterior. This is called a slap tear. And sometimes just people from everyday wear and tear can get labral injuries as well, too, which cause pain. So they can be injured in elite athletes, to the weekend warrior, to people who have just basically used their shoulder over a period of time. There are lots of different treatment options for these injuries, and it varies whether you're an elite athlete, a weekend warrior, or someone who just is having shoulder pain from years of using your upper extremities. Listen to our latest podcast. We break down labral injuries so you can better understand what's happening to your favorite athlete on your favorite sports team, or understand a little bit more about what may be going on in your shoulder or your neighbor or your friends or family members who may have a labral tear as well, too. Today, we're going to be concentrating on the shoulder. And one of the things we've heard a lot about recently is Pascal Siakam, who plays for the Raptors, who suffered a labral injury to his shoulder. And a lot of people don't necessarily know what the labrum is. The shoulder is a very complex joint. Maybe, Brian, take us a little bit into what happened to Pascal Siakam and kind of what that means for him moving forward.
Sure. Siakam's injury actually happened a few weeks before the end of the season. And I think most Bay Area people are going to remember him as somebody who really outplayed expectations when they beat the Warriors. But he was hurt way back against the Grizzlies. He was playing really well up until that point, and he just kind of had an awkward injury to his shoulder. Looking at the game film, it's hard to exactly see. There wasn't a dislocation. There wasn't like kind of that classic labral tear injury where we think of as an anterior dislocation. So even though none of us are the team doctors for the Raptors, the assumption is this is probably more of a superior labral tear. And that's important because that's where the biceps attaches. So a lot of the load that goes through the shoulder ends up going through that area. Drew, you've worked a lot with pitchers and overhead athletes in fellowship. And currently, how do you describe to your patients what a labral tear is and what your labrum does?
The labrum, it's a fibrocartilaginous structure that lines the shoulder socket. Makes sense. And but it's almost like a little bumper around the shoulder joint, and then it helps deepen the socket. The shoulder socket's actually really shallow, and the humeral head, the ball just kind of rests on that. But the labrum helps make that a little deeper, so the ball will sit there, you know, load that joint like it should. And then the labrum is also important because that's where the ligaments around the shoulder attach. And so that's why whenever people dislocate their shoulder, they tear the labrum and they have problems with instability because those ligaments aren't attached like they should be. And then like Brian was saying, at the top of the shoulder, the biceps, one of the two biceps tendons attaches just right at the labrum. So the superior labrum can be a common problem because then every time that biceps tendon is active, you're pulling on that labrum. And if it's not firmly attached, then you have pain, dysfunction, and it's especially a more common injury in throwers. And whenever you're rotating the shoulder back to throw, put a lot of stress in that area. And then same thing as you're following through, if there is an injury there, it can lead to problems with velocity, problems with control. Like the pitcher feels like he can't get his arm in the slot or her arm in the slot and just can't control the ball. And so it can really, you know, disrupt those higher level activities with the shoulder.
I tend to see it, I think, because I see more aquatic athletes than you do. I tend to see it a lot in surfers and swimmers. Certainly that a lot of the same motions tend to apply. So that load, especially when you're trying to pop up when you're surfing, or just the repetitive use of your shoulder, especially in people who do a lot of surfing, we tend to see it a lot in. Nirav, which patient population in kids do you tend to see superior labral or slap tears most commonly in?
I usually see it in the overhead athletes, kind of similar to some of the kind of the younger adults. I think particularly in lacrosse groups, I see lacrosse athletes, pitchers, and actually volleyball players. So I think in females, volleyball players get it a lot, particularly ones who are doing a lot of, you know, kind of overhead activity at the front who aren't necessarily setting. So yeah, definitely any of the repetitive overhead activity athletes will get it. Interestingly enough, I think that a lot of these kids, and we'll jump into this a little bit later, can usually do better just with the right physical therapy, because a lot of them, it's a mechanical issue, not a necessarily that there's something wrong with their tissues. A little bit different than the adult population, but definitely in those repetitive overhead athletes is where I see it.
This was a type of injury that we really didn't diagnose until we had MRIs and shoulder arthroscopy. So the term a slap tear sounds horrible. And like a lot of things in orthopedic surgery, we probably didn't think too much about it before we named it. Steve Snyder, who works down in Southern California and is one of the godfathers of good shoulder arthroscopy, named it in a journal article way back in 1992. So when I graduated from high school, and I think Narev was almost born, he described it as a superior labrum anterior to posterior tear. And what that essentially is a tear that goes from in front of the biceps to behind the biceps. And it kind of makes sense for everything where you think about when your bicep is firing, it's going to cause problems. So for a lot of our patients, that's that eccentric load that you have when you're throwing or when you're surfing or when you're trying to block a ball playing volleyball. And for Siakam, probably what happens is he can play for a lot of the game, but when it gets up to the point where he's trying to block a shot or there's a surprise move on his shoulder, it just is going to hurt enough that an athlete at that level is going to have difficulty playing at the, you know, essentially the elite level that he needs to. What I often tell my patients is a typical patient with a slap tear feel absolutely fine 99% of the time, but it's that 1% that really inhibits athletic activity that's going to be a problem. One of the things I think comes up most commonly, however, is when a slap tear is just a normal finding and when a slap tear is a pathologic finding. And I'm going to do something totally nerdy here and ask Drew to talk about what his and our study, but really a study that Drew did. What did he find when he looked at MRIs of essentially normal patients?
Well, what we found, it was a group effort, and we looked at a large group of patients who had MRIs done for various reasons. And importantly, they did all have shoulder symptoms of some kind that prompted them to get an MRI. It was motivated by us seeing a lot of patients coming in with a diagnosis of a slap tear. And then, you know, you talk to them, examine them, and their symptoms really don't line up with that type of injury. And we wanted to just see how common these are in general. So we looked at just a whole bunch of MRIs and really found that with increasing age, the likelihood that you'd have a slap tear increases. And it can almost even be thought of as a normal process in people over the age of 40, 50 years old in a lot of shoulders. And you know, what we saw is in that 51 to 65 year old age range, about 2/3 of patients had a slap tear on MRI. And then in the patients older than 65, that number was above 80%. If you get an MRI for any reason, there's a really good chance in that age range that you'll have some evidence of injury to that structure. And so it gets really important for us to, you know, try to line up what the problem is, what the limitations are, and then, you know, what the exam findings are to see, is this just a finding on the imaging or is this something that's actually causing problems?
I think that's a great point because I think a lot of the time that these are normal findings that we see on MRI and we're actually looking for something else. We're looking for a rotator cuff tear. We're looking for cartilage degeneration. But what patients end up seeing is something that sounds horrible on the imaging. It says a degenerative complex tear of the superior labral complex extending into the biceps. I mean, that sounds worse than a lot of cancer diagnoses when you first read it. But the reality is this is probably a normal type of aging. And what I often tell my patients is this is why I'd never ask a dermatologist to look at the hair loss pattern on the top of my head, because the way they would describe it would end up being like, you know, there is a semi-iatrogenic injury to the anterior part of the scalp with discoloration throughout a majority of the hair follicles, which may lead to neurovitis and a complete loss of superior scalp coverage. So I think it's often how we describe it. And I know some imaging people have erred towards talking about superior labral tears as an age consistent finding. So they'll say, this is what we see consistent with the age of the patient, rather than just saying it's a degenerative or complex tear. So Nirav, going back to young athletes and assuming that patients have a true superior labral tear, how do you counsel patients mid-season on what to do in order to try to get back either with or without surgery?
I think kind of just piggybacking on what you said before, I think also in the younger athletes as well too, we'll see superior labral pathology come up. And I think there's a portion of these athletes, just by nature of being throwing athletes, they have some inflammation or signal in that area. So a lot of these athletes who may get an MRI where I'm looking for, you know, something else, particularly if they're 16, 17, or 18, will come back with a report that says slap tear, you know, and that's just from the throwing process as well too. So I think also in the younger population, I think a lot of this is incidental or just activity related, doesn't necessarily need to get treated. You know, for the in-season athlete, you know, as long as they are not having any kind of major types of pain, and I usually what I kind of break the pain down into is two, if it's pain during throwing, then I'm going to shut them down for 4 to 6 weeks. If they're having pain afterwards, as long as the pain gets better the next day and we can get them into a physical therapy program and perhaps change the amount they're pitching, then I think it's a reasonable thing to do. But I think for most people, just because of the risk of number one, making it worse, and number two, causing secondary issues with the elbow, I'll say, look, you've got this pathology. If your exam's consistent with it, probably the best thing to do is rest for 6 to 8 weeks. Mechanics, right? If they're like a high level pitcher and something needs to potentially, they need to perform, that's probably the one group I may consider an injection in just to kind of get them through the season. But I think the vast majority of athletes, which are, you know, 98% of them, considering just resting them and kind of having them rehab is probably better.
Yeah. And I think importantly too, there have been studies on asymptomatic pitchers even. And so they just get shoulder MRIs of elite level pitchers. And a high percentage of them actually have slap tears on those MRIs. So, you know, as soon as that person has some pain in the shoulder, if they get an MRI and it says slap tear, there's that tendency to say, okay, well, you have an injury, I can fix that. But it may have been there before. And it can even be almost like a compensatory change in the shoulder to let somebody throw. And then almost the worst thing we can do is go in and try and fix that and disturb the shoulder. So I think that plan of rest and usually be able to get people through the injury rather than, you know, rushing to jump on an imaging finding.
100%. I find that superior labral tears are probably one of the easiest surgeries we do. I mean, we can essentially do it with a camera, one portal, and a tiny needle stick. And the actual techniques, thanks to a lot of our technologies, are pretty straightforward, but the recovery is tough. And I think even though we are often inside the shoulder for under 20, 30 minutes, and there isn't a lot of disruption to soft tissue, or we're not pulling on a lot of things like we do for a rotator cuff repair, we're not changing the capsular dynamics like anterior shoulder stabilization, these patients take a long time to recover. Why do you think they're telling Siakam it takes 6 months to recover? I mean, it seems like once it's tacked down, he should be good to go and ready to play. But they're saying he may be back by December, January.
No, I think in general, the way I like to add it is it takes 3 months for the soft tissue healing to occur, but then it's another 3 months to gain that strength back and you know, kind of that confidence. So, you know, it's one thing for the regular athlete or maybe just the regular person who has it. A pair of 3 months, you kind of go back and do your activities. I mean, he needs to kind of get that strength back to perform at an NBA level. So I think it takes that 3 months to really get that strength and confidence back and not re-injure it. So that's kind of the way I look at it. There's the healing process structurally, and then there's the healing process functionally that has to take place.
I agree. I tell my patients it's going to be 5 months before you can even consider it. And it usually takes another month or two before patients actually feel like they're ready to go back. So Drew, you tend to treat a lot of our older athletes. How would you treat a 45-year-old with a symptomatic labral tear?
We would do all those things that we've talked about, like the period of rest, physical therapy, injections. And a lot of times we're able to get people better with that. And then in those cases where it isn't getting better, like for some people, surgery is the best option. And I think what is interesting and surprises a lot of people is oftentimes instead of repairing the labrum in those middle-aged to older athletes, the best approach is actually to move the biceps tendon. And so we think a lot of the problem with those tears is that the biceps tendon is attached right there. And so it just keeps pulling on that unstable labrum. And so what we can do is we can just detach the biceps tendon and then refix that on the arm. So called a biceps tendinesis. So the biceps tendon can still function, but it's no longer pulling on the labrum. The problem is if you go in and fix the labrum, if you're even older than 35, 36 years old, you're at a really high risk for shoulder stiffness and needing another shoulder surgery. By just moving the biceps tendon, it takes care of the problem and then pretty reliably get people back to everything without restrictions and the shoulder working well. Do you do anything different, Brian?
No, my cutoff is 37 because I think that the studies by Matt Provencher have shown that over 37, you have a 33% failure rate if you have a slap repair. And I'm not willing to do any surgery that has a 33% failure rate other than rotator cuff repair, which I just do a lot of hand waving on. But I wanted to ask a question about mechanics. If we think that you can do a bicep tenodesis, so you can essentially move the biceps, when do you think we're going to transition away from ever doing slap repairs? Or I guess another way to ask that is, do we think that the biceps has a real role in pitching mechanics or throwing mechanics? Or is it essentially a vestigial organ that we could move in a variety of, or in a majority of pitchers and elite athletes and get better long-term results?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and something that we still haven't really figured out. The long head of the biceps tendon, it runs up a groove into the shoulder and then across the top of the humeral head. And we don't completely understand what all it does. But I think some of the hesitancy is in those younger, really high-level throwers is, you know, just kind of the more you change at the shoulder, it may be hard to get them back to that really high level. And if you say, you know, guys pitching 95, and even if you drop him to like 92 miles an hour, like that might be the difference between him playing professional baseball and then, you know, being out of a job. So like in that group, it's just, we're so concerned about, you know, anything that throws them off that absolute peak performance.
Yeah, well, I think we'll wrap that up with the quote, we don't understand what all it does, which I think explains a lot of what I thought about most of medical school classes when people would ask me about physiology. So hopefully this was somewhat informative. Hopefully Siakam makes a decent recovery here, and we look forward to talking to everybody again, hopefully in the next week or two.
Thanks for listening to the UCSF Sports Medicine Podcast, 6 to 8 weeks, perspectives in medicine. What do you think of this topic? Connect with us now. In addition to finding our contact form, you'll also find our social media links and our entire 6 to 8 weeks episode archive. Help us grow our listenership by liking, subscribing, and sharing everywhere. We're eager to hear from you, and we'll be sending you more great thought-provoking content in less than 6 to 8 weeks.